Continuing the discussion of leadership and fall down, particularly within the context of Srila Prabhupada's International Society for Krishna Consciousness. In the last talk, I quoted from Srila Prabhupada's commentary on Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'll again read a little snippet of that. How much tribulation and disturbance can be produced by even a slight deviation from the strict principles of devotional life? Those who are in leadership positions, who are trusted and looked up to by many devotees, should consider how much tribulation and disturbance can be produced by even a slight deviation from the strict principles of devotional life. So even if a leader, a temptation may be there, and the leader, who is a spiritual leader, should not be subject to temptation. But even if there is some kind of feeling, well, maybe I could just try out a little maya, but just consider how much disturbance that will cause in the minds of sincere, faithful devotees who look up to you, who have invested their spiritual hopes to a large extent in you. Apart from the leaders internally controlling themselves, there should be oversight of the sannyasis and leaders. I mentioned in the last talk how the direct traveling assistants, disciples of sannyasis should point out if something is not quite right. But on an institutional level also, there should be some oversight of sannyasis. Not that we want to micromanage anyone's life, but it would be good to right now take a stock of the sannyasis and other spiritual leaders. Do they have female secretaries, female traveling companions, special relationships with any woman, any other sign that they might be gravitating toward or living an overly luxurious life? These things can go on. We tend to turn a blind eye to the what should be questionable in leaders. Is it naivete, or is it we're just thinking that, you know, they're so great and they can do anything, they're okay? Well, to some extent, that should be there. We don't want to, like I say, we don't want to micromanage and put so many restrictions. For preaching in the modern world, there has to be some contact with Kanaka Kamini. These two words are used. The two main stumbling blocks to renounce life. Kanaka means gold, money, wealth, and Kamini means women who inspire sexual desire. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur adds also, Kanaka Kamini Pratishta Bhagini. Pratishta Bhagini is the tigress of desire for recognition, fame, name, fame, glory, all these things. We shouldn't be overly critical or fault-finding, but at the same time, we shouldn't be naive. There is a tendency toward groupthink that Everyone thinks, well, it's okay, must be okay. Everyone else thinks it's okay, so it must be okay. Just like in Mayapur, for years, there was a sannyasi involved with a girls' school. And that should have been a red flag for everyone, myself included. But myself also, I thought, well, he's a good devotee, he's doing so many good things, and GPCs are going there every year, they see it, so many resident devotees see it, and I just come for a few days every year, and so who am I to get involved in all these things? It's kind of groupthink. In ISKCON, just after the departure of Srila Prabhupada, there was groupthink by which I and almost everyone in ISKCON at the time thought that the 11 devotees who took the role of initiating gurus, they were all Paramahamsas. Just automatically by initiating, they became Paramahamsas. Maybe the 11 themselves believed it. Most of the devotees in ISKCON did, at least for some time, until it became apparent that Paramahamsa status is not something conferred by wishful thinking. Groupthink, how much we suffered for our hopeful naivete. Srila Prabhupada refers to the super title, Sannyas, Goswami, Swami, Goswami. I'll read from the purport of Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 2, Text 24. One who is therefore enjoying this super title, Swami or Goswami, must be very strict in controlling his senses. One who is in his unusual wording, enjoying this super title. One is considered to be Übermensch, the Superman, because one has that title. But it's not the title that makes one a Swami, but it's controlling the senses. One who is therefore enjoying this super title, Srila Prabhupada writes, Swami or Goswami must be very strict in controlling his senses. Indeed, he must be master of his senses. If by chance the senses want to work independently, he must control them. If we simply practice avoiding material sense gratification, controlling the senses is automatically achieved. So we see here that the super title by which one is looked up to so much, it doesn't, the title itself doesn't confer super status, but one has to live up to it in controlling his senses. And Srila Prabhupada gives the simple formula for doing that. Avoiding sense gratification, kanaka kamini, wealth, luxury, women. Of course, we may say that Srila Prabhupada, he accepted luxury for preaching. When he was driven in a Rolls-Royce car and in Australia, a hired car, and the public was skeptical about that, Srila Prabhupada said, what is this tin can Rolls-Royce? God goes in a gold car, so this Rolls-Royce car isn't even good enough. That was Srila Prabhupada. He could do that. So if one can use luxury and opulence in Krishna's service, all well and good. Otherwise, we should see that Srila Prabhupada was very happy living in a mud hut in Bhubaneswar and a grass hut in Mayapur. He was actually detached. Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 14, Text 4, purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, unless one's desires are completely transferred to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the desire for family life continues even after one has taken sannyas. Sometimes in our society, ISKCON, a person out of sentiment may take sannyas, but because his desires are not burned completely, he again takes to family life, even at the risk of losing his prestige and disgracing his good name. These strong desires can be burned out completely when one fully engages in the service of the Lord in devotional life. So Srila Prabhupada points out, that the risk of losing one's prestige and disgracing his good name. Yesterday we were discussing Vantashi, just for a little sense gratification, that even if you think you're enjoying the super title, and that's all gone, or is largely compromised, if we don't live up to it. From Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, Text 2, Srila Prabhupada writes, the sannyasis are held in high estimation on the strength of practical renunciation. It's seen that they're actually renounced. It was seen in the case of Srila Prabhupada that even though he did have very nice quarters in London, Bhaktivedanta Manor, in Melbourne, he had beautiful quarters. Wherever he went, the devotees provided good facility for him. Once the movement started picking up in the beginning, Srila Prabhupada would stand in line to go in the shower cubicle, along with the becoming devotees. They weren't fully committed to devotional service at that time. But it was seen that Prabhupada was practically renounced. How he worked so hard, traveled so hard, accepted various conditions. Close the window. Yeah, is it needed to close? That sound will come, huh? No? One brother. Okay, I'll go. Okay. We don't want bogus sannyasis. Forgive me if I'm stepping on anyone's toes here, but we don't want sannyasis or even temple presidents or whatever living luxury lifestyles on others' hard-earned money. We don't want sannyasis with women massaging them or embracing girls. Such things make the sannyas ashram a laughing stock. Devotees naturally will become cynical and bitter. They might even make court cases. It's quite possible. I gave so much money and then he just used it for his sense gratification. Not only sannyasis, grihastha also have to be careful. Even householders should follow the rules which are there. They're in Shastra. We may not know the exact rule, but we should understand the social convention. That a man who's married doesn't enter the house of another married man if only the woman is there, if the man is away from home. He doesn't do that. You may be married, but you don't enter into frivolous conversations with women, joking and laughing and so many things. So we're getting on the case of sannyasis here who fall down or don't live up to the proper standard. But we see that divorce and remarriage is accepted practically as normal among our Western supposed to be brahmanas who are supposed to show the ideal to human society. And it's increasingly becoming accepted among Indian ISKCON brahmanas. And of course, in so many cases, we see that one of the parties is more innocent, the circumstances, this, that, and the other. But it's not good. I'm going to read quite a remarkable statement from Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 28, Text 29. Kuyogino ye vihitantarayair manushya bhutais tridisho pasrishtaihi te praktan abhyasa balena bhuyo yunjanti yogang natu karma tantram. Translation. Sometimes the progress of imperfect transcendentalists is checked by attachment to family members, disciples, or others who are sent by envious demigods for that purpose. That's remarkable. But on the strength of their accumulated advancement, such imperfect transcendentalists will resume their practice of yoga in the next life. They will never again be trapped in the network of fruitive work. We hear so many times in the Puranas and Itihasas of yogis being tempted by beautiful girls sent from the heavenly planets, apsaras, by Indra to break the austerities of the yogis, because Indra becomes afraid that the yogis are going to usurp my position. It's mentioned here in Bhagavatam also. Even disciples may be sent by envious demigods to break the vows of transcendentalists. The purport, as given by followers of Srila Prabhupada: sometimes sannyasis and other spiritual teachers are bewildered by flattering followers and disciples sent by the demigods to embarrass spiritual leaders who are lacking complete spiritual knowledge. What's going on here? Someone sent by the demigods, it means they come from the heavenly planets to tempt someone. I would understand it more like this, that there are devotees who act as tempters or temptresses, but it's not necessarily that they're insincere devotees, but their mind becomes influenced by demigods who want to waylay the transcendentalist. It may be that a devotee is very sincere. There have been many cases, not only in ISKCON, but in many spiritual or quasi-spiritual or religious movements, that a devotee or a follower, female, may be very sincerely trying to serve a male spiritual leader, and the male spiritual leader becomes attracted to them in the wrong way. So that may be the demigods are also behind the scenes orchestrating things there, even unknown to the innocent or semi-innocent tempter or temptress. Continuing reading this purport: similarly, spiritual progress is sometimes checked by attachment to one's bodily relatives. Although an imperfect transcendentalist may fall down from yoga practice in this life, he will resume it in the next life on the strength of his accumulated merit as described in the Bhagavad Gita. The words Natu Karma Tantram indicate that a fallen transcendentalist does not have to pass through the lower stages of fruitive activity and gradually be promoted to the practice of yoga. Rather, he will immediately resume his yoga practice at the point at which he left it. Of course, one should not presume to fall back on the facility offered here. But should try to become perfect in this lifetime. Sannyasis especially should remove the knot of lust from their hearts and should avoid falling into the clutches of flattering followers or female disciples sent by the demigods to expose a so-called spiritual leader who is imperfect in Krishna conscious knowledge. Heavy stuff, yeah. Heavy purport, and we're discussing heavy topics, and we should discuss, because spiritual life, it is serious. We don't want to turn it into something frivolous. This is a huge topic. There are considerations also that someone might not be fallen in the sense of deviating from the regulative principles, but they may be deviated in other ways. We could say a philosophical fall down, tendencies towards sahajya or mayavad, or bringing in material considerations. just deviating the whole process of Krishna consciousness away from the pure spiritual truths given by Srila Prabhupada in pursuance of the previous acharyas. The two, philosophical fall down and physical fall down, they're not completely different, because if there's a philosophical fall down or a philosophical deviation, then without that higher taste, without that spiritual strength we get from practicing Krishna consciousness, we're not going to be able to maintain our spiritual position, and then we'll fall down. Rasa varjang rasopyasya parandrishtva nivartate. And the same thing, we may deviate physically. For instance, a sannyasi having a girlfriend, and then we want to justify it and say, well, it's okay because this, this, that, that, and we don't have to follow all the regulated principles. Don't be very strict. We want to have a very liberal movement. It's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very liberal, but we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not very liberal with Chota Haridas. He wasn't very liberal in the matter of mixing between men and women. In so many ways, he wasn't liberal. Srila Prabhupada also again and again warned about this. Srila Prabhupada, he was very strict in some ways, very liberal in other ways. We should see how he was strict, how he was liberal. And for instance, Srila Prabhupada wasn't so liberal in the matter of promoting women, devotees in women's bodies, into positions of ecumenical power within the ISKCON institution. He didn't make women Tamil presidents, GBC members, or gurus, although he loved all devotees. He gave the opportunity to everyone to chant Hare Krishna, but he gave leadership positions to devotees in male bodies. So it could be considered a watering down or deviation from the proper standard if we go against the system which has gone on for eons, time immemorial, of separating men and women and giving prescribed roles. Again, we're talking about varnashram. If we want to go against the natural order, that could be considered a philosophical deviation, and that will lead to physical fall down. As Jayadvaita Swami once famously said, no one ever fell down from being overly strict in the matter of following the rules and regulations. Of course, being overly strict, that should be with oneself, not to, one can preach it to others, not impose it on others. But if we insist, for instance, that everyone who joins this movement should only eat once a day, or some kind of concoction like this, then we may do it ourselves, but we can't impose that on others. But for spiritual leaders, we do have to have rules, and we have to impose on them. Well, we shouldn't have to impose on them. If they're actual spiritual leader, they should be self-disciplined, but there should be checks and balances also. And there will be fall downs. Everything is, in spiritual life, it's always a risk. It's a razor's edge. Kshurasya dhara. What to do? What should we do? in the inevitable situation, however strict we are, however much we oversee, there's going to be some fall down. So what do we do? Do we punish those who fall, leaders who fall and cause so much disappointment? Do we punish them? Do we reject them? Do we forgive them and try to rectify them? One stance is that we have to punish offenders, otherwise offenses will be taken lightly. If you think, well, I can get away with it, then slap on the wrist, what does it matter? If we set a precedent that such and such a big swami did something wrong, and then there was just some nothing, hardly anything, and he went on with life, no one said anything, then it becomes a precedent which will weaken the whole sampradaya. So we have to consider that justice should not be, not only should justice be done, but it should be seen to be done. A famous statement in the philosophy of law. Not only should justice be done, but it should be seen to be done. What does that mean? We flog offenders in the streets? Not necessarily, but to uphold dharma, sannyas is within varnashram dharma, so we're talking about dharma, to uphold dharma, sometimes we have to act in a manner that we ourselves may not want to do. Lord Rama is the very personification of dharma. He didn't banish Mother Sita because she was at fault. He banished her because, even though she was faultless, but Rama thought that it might be taken in future, that it's acceptable for a woman who has lived in the jurisdiction of another man to come back. Now, of course, Sita Devi was never polluted by Ravana, not even slightly in her thoughts. But Lord Rama and Mother Sita, their whole life was one of sacrifice. They were in such an exalted position, even if we consider from the material perspective, king and queen. They're served, they have luxury, they have all facilities, but they sacrificed for the benefit of society at large. Rama, to uphold the word of his father, went to the forest. Sita, to show the ideal of a married woman, she followed her husband. And Lord Rama, by banishing such a chaste wife, he did so to set the example of how an ideal leader should act. So it's not that even if someone does something wrong or is perceived to be wrong, even the perception, either we should be able to convince others that something which seems to be wrong isn't wrong. But we see in the case of Lord Rama, he didn't give the benefit of the doubt. That's the wrong thing to say. He didn't doubt Sita Devi, but he understood human psychology, how it would be misinterpreted. So he was so strict. It's all about perception. Setting the right example. So we shouldn't let them off lightly. Serious offenses call for serious punishment. Does that not make sense? We don't want a culture of too big to do wrong. We don't want that in ISKCON. It's not enough to say that, well, a senior devotee, you shouldn't criticize. That's the general understanding. Senior devotees should not be criticized, but he should be above suspicion also. From a letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote to a sannyasi disciple, don't create any awkward situation that may be criticized. Caesar's wife must be above criticism. Up to now, as I have got a respectable situation, I wish that all my disciples will have a similar respectable position in society. That will keep my name good, like father, like son. So we should consider also those who are in positions of spiritual leadership. If we act wrongly, that will besmirch Srila Prabhupada's reputation, at least in the eyes of some. If Srila Prabhupada's followers are seen to be ideal brahmanas, best persons in the world by their ideal behavior, that will be a great credit to Srila Prabhupada. And if they're just the opposite, it will be seen in the other way. So we should be very strict. Then we should punish. Is that not right? But at the same time, we don't want to reject devotees who have done exceptional service, or any service. Srila Prabhupada was appreciative of any service done by any devotee to help him. There was one of his sannyasis who had fallen away, and then Srila Prabhupada met him after some time on his travels. His name was Hanuman. This is related in Srila Prabhupada Leela, that book. So when this sannyasi, ex-sannyasi, met Srila Prabhupada, he said humbly to Srila Prabhupada, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had one disciple in the renounced order, Chota Haridas, whom he rejected from his association because he became too lusty after a woman. I was also one of your sannyas disciples, and I too became lusty after a woman. I was wondering if you have also rejected me from your association. A heavy silence follows. Everyone in the room looks at Prabhupada, who sits with his head down. After a long pause, Prabhupada looks up and speaks quietly to Hanuman. Lord Chaitanya is God. He can spread this movement all over the world in 1 second without the help of anyone if he likes. I am not God. I am simply a servant of God. I require so much assistance to help me spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. If someone renders even some small service to help me, I am eternally indebted to him. You have rendered so much assistance to me. How could I reject you? Quoting this, Hanuman quoted Chota Haridas, who was rejected. Prabhupada said, I won't reject. Interestingly, the Chota Haridas story in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the very next chapter, we have Damodar Pandit, who's known for being very critical, even of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If anyone does anything slightly wrong in the devotional line, Damodar Pandit criticized Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's indirect contact with a beautiful widow. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wasn't directly associating with a beautiful widow, but Damodar pointed out that the young son of this beautiful widow comes daily to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who showers affection upon the young boy, and this may be misconstrued by others. See how strict Damodar Pandit was. He would criticize even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't appreciate very much. But Damodar Pandit had a point. A senior devotee should not just be above criticism, but he should be seen to be above suspicion. We don't want to reject anyone who wants to serve. Some years ago, I said to the Tamil president in an important temple in the Western world, I said to him that, look, you're engaging this devotee who ran off with some other man's wife, and now he's married to her. That's a very bad example. You're giving so much responsibility to this man. The Tamil president replied to me that, you see, he wants to serve. He's done wrong, but he wants to serve, and he's capable of serving. And it's so hard to get anyone of his caliber and his desire to serve, so I'm engaging him. In India, there's the culture of, if you're big enough, you can get away with it, to a large extent. It also depends whether you're in the party which is in power. That also has a big influence on it. But in general, if you're big enough, you can get away with so many things. And even politicians are exposed as being horrendously corrupt, and people still vote them in. Maybe it's some idea they're like some demigod or whatever. That culture's gradually being eroded. In the West, it's coming down. The Me Too movement exposed so many men who were taking advantage of women, thinking they're too big to get away with. The men were thinking they're too big to be called to a court of law for sexually exploiting women. But we have in the Western world that the President of the United States at that time and the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom deliberately lied about Iraq having weapons of mass destruction. They deliberately lied so that they could invade that country. Huge. It's a war crime of massive proportions. So many of their own citizens had to die for that, and what to speak of the citizens of Iraq, absolutely against international law. Of course, they don't get called into the international court because they're too big, they get away with it. But recently, the more recent president of the United States, Trump, and the present president, Biden, have been called out for having classified files in their residences, which shouldn't be. What comes of that, we'll have to see. We don't want the kind of situation in ISKCON that we have in the United States, where another president, going back quite some years now, had sex with a female assistant who blurted out about it. The president publicly denied it. I did not have sex with that woman. It was later found out to have lied. He did have sex with her. But no one seemed, of course, apart from his political opponents, the public didn't take it very seriously. He's remained popular and in office. We don't want that kind of situation in ISKCON. Here's one from the religious world. In Croatia some years ago, at one of our summer camps held in a rural area, the local parish priest, Catholic priest, was invited. He came with his girlfriend. Catholic priests are not supposed to, they're not married, they're not supposed to have girlfriends. And the girlfriend was really a real dressed up with makeup all over, a real femme fatale, if you're allowed to use such words nowadays. And afterwards, I asked the host of that, what do the local people think about their parish priest having a girlfriend like this? Now, I asked him, who is that? He said, who's that woman with him? He says, his girlfriend. I said, don't the local people protest? He said, well, no, they don't protest. They think, you know, it's natural. People have feelings. We don't want this kind of thing in ISKCON. At the same time, we shouldn't think that everyone who has difficulty, who wobbles, or who falls into illicit sex or other such things, anyone in a leadership position who does that, they must have taken that position just to exploit others. But I doubt it very much that everyone who in ISKCON has perpetrated wrong deeds on others, they wiggled their way into a leadership position just so they could take advantage of that to exploit that. I don't think. It's unlikely. There's a statement by Lord Krishna just after Duryodhana had died. This is in Mahabharata. And naturally, Duryodhana, how bad he was, Bhima especially, remember. Yudhishthira was thinking of good qualities of Duryodhana, and pretty hard to find good qualities of Duryodhana, but Yudhishthira was able to find. Krishna gave the judgment that no good man is entirely good and no bad man is entirely bad. How about that? Of course, a pure devotee is entirely good. But unless one is a pure devotee, one may be trying to be good, and it could Yudhishthira himself could even be faulted if we don't remember that he's a pure devotee of Krishna. But his gambling caused so much, and it goes on and on. There's another saying, I don't know where this is from, every sinner has a future and every saintly person has a past. Think about it. Sin, offenses. We're not just talking about sin, talking about offenses, how leaders, they mess up the spiritual life of others if they misbehave grossly, wrongly. Is any sin unforgivable? Is anything that a leader does unforgivable? We see some leaders, they are practically exiled from devotional service. They're not allowed to associate with devotees, or even if they're allowed, the wall of disgust and contempt among devotees is so intense that even years and years after some maybe serious events, but devotees are not willing to forgive and forget and even allow devotees to come into their association to visit the temple or whatever. But Prabhupada was ready to accept anyone, it seems, who had that rare desire to serve Krishna. It's very hard to get anyone to serve Krishna. Gallons of blood, Srila Prabhupada said. We expend gallons of blood to bring anyone in. If anyone wants to serve, Srila Prabhupada was ready to engage them. However, Srila Prabhupada did reject some devotees. Those who rejected him or who... Well, let's see. There was the case of Nitai, who more... He rejected Prabhupada. He didn't say, I reject you. He didn't say those words, but he asked for, in a letter he wrote for Srila Prabhupada's blessings to find a bona fide guru. What an offensive statement. But I would surmise that that even after being so offensive to Srila Prabhupada, if Nitai had come back to Srila Prabhupada with genuine remorse, Srila Prabhupada would have accepted and engaged him. There was also the case of Kanupriya and Jamadagni, who Srila Prabhupada detected, they were asking questions, difficult questions to Srila Prabhupada about leaders who they were serving on. Well, one of them said that one of the leaders who had been appointed by Srila Prabhupada had approached him, that devotee, with homosexual intentions, and they had various questions, which if you see those questions, they might seem like valid questions. Or how do we explain, if we're going to go and preach to professors, how do we explain to them statements in the Bhagavatam that Ugrasena in Dwarka had so many servants and guards that the number exceeded the present population of the human race? So these are valid questions, but Srila Prabhupada detected. He saw their long hair, mustache and beard and all this, and he detected in their attitude something seriously wrong, and he told them, then you better give, if you can't reconcile yourself to this, Prabhupada told them, better you give up Krishna consciousness. Whew. Heavy statements. But as long as one was committed to Srila Prabhupada, or not plainly taking advantage of the facilities offered, which is more possible among Indian devotees, I guess. There are many, not so much nowadays, but in the 1970s and 1980s, we used to see people would join from poor backgrounds. And unlike the Western devotees, who generally their standard of living, especially in the 1960s and 1970s, when they joined ISKCON, their standard of living went down. But those who joined in India, often their standard of living in terms of quality of food, quantity of food, living facilities and clothing, their quality of life increased much, so some came to take advantage. What do we do? It's the mercy versus justice question. It's endless. Where does justice is required, but mercy is also required, especially when we're dealing with devotees. We shouldn't be too keen to punish as a principle. But where does justice give way to mercy? Where's the borderline exactly? It's not fully regulatable. You can make so many laws, but where do you draw the line? That's how it's said, that too much strictness, this is in Mahabharata, too much strictness and everyone's in an atmosphere of fear. They can't live properly. Too much lenience and the rogues take advantage. From Mahabharata also, Draupadi said to Yudhishthira, one should forgive someone who has served well in the past, who makes a mistake out of ignorance or feeble-mindedness, who makes a mistake for the first time, or who makes a mistake, he didn't really mean to do it. But don't forgive someone who knowingly makes a mistake and claims to be innocent, or who makes a mistake a second time. Well, how did Srila Prabhupada implement this? There's one anecdote which Srila Prabhupada, concerning Srila Prabhupada, narrated by Giriraj Swami in his Vyasa Pujaring offering in 2003. Giriraj Maharaj wrote, one of the first devotees to join you, Srila Prabhupada, in New York City in 1966, had gone to Calcutta and somehow gotten involved in smoking ganja. It's not difficult to guess who it is, but Giriraj Maharaj didn't give the name, so I won't. So the temple president from Calcutta phoned you in Bombay to inform you. After hearing his report, you instructed the Tamil president, tell him that if he doesn't stop smoking ganja, I will reject him. Afterward, Tamal Krishna Goswami asked Prabhupada, is that true? Will you reject him? Srila Prabhupada replied, no, I cannot reject anyone. And then Tamal Krishna Goswami said, isn't there some limit? Don't you have to draw the line somewhere? And Srila Prabhupada replied, Lord Nityananda's mercy has no limit. Regarding the mercy of Lord Nityananda, there is a pertinent narration in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Kala Krishna Das was traveling with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How about that? He had direct association with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, exclusive association, in as much as he was the only devotee. Kala Krishna Das was the only devotee traveling with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How close association can you get for weeks and months? But Kala Krishna Das, nevertheless, in that situation, fell away from devotional service. He fell into the clutches of the Bhattadharis, being allured by women. Just goes to show, it's, as long as we're in this material world, it can fall down. Whew! Shocking, horrifying. Anyway, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu extracted that Krishna Das and brought Krishna Das with him back to Puri, finishing his tour of South India. He kept Krishna Das engaged in his service. But when he reached back to Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told his followers there that, look, this man, he came with me, he fell down, get him out of here. I don't want him anymore. And Kala Krishna Das became shattered. Oh, I'm rejected by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He didn't try to say, well, I didn't make any mistake, but he was just shattered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's rejection. But then the devotees, headed by Nityananda Prabhu, Jagadananda, Mukunda and Damodar, began to consider a certain plan. Srila Prabhupada comments in his purport in this section, even though a person is rejected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the devotees of the Lord do not reject him. Therefore, the Lord's devotees are more merciful than the Lord himself. We're talking about the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda acting as an ideal devotee, showing the compassion of a devotee to someone who has fallen down. Srila Narottam Das Thakur thus sings, Charya Vaishnava Seva Nishta Payache Keba. One cannot be relieved from the material clutches without engaging in the service of pure devotees. The Lord himself may sometimes be very hard, but their devotees are always kind. Thus, Kala Krishna Das received the mercy of the four devotees mentioned above. And the four devotees, as described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, considered, anyway, we wanted a person to go to Bengal to inform Shachi Mata that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has returned back to Puri. So let's send Krishna Das. Kala Krishna Das, we need to send someone. No one wants to go to leave Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's company. But anyway, someone has to go, and Kala Krishna Das is being thrown out. But we can engage him in service. So saying this, they kept Krishna Das engaged in the service of the Lord and gave him assurance. They said, okay, we'll give you some service. You're still connected to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Prabhupada comments in his purport, because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected him, Kala Krishna Das became very, very sorry and began to cry. Therefore, the Lord's devotees took compassion upon him, gave him insurance, and encouraged him to engage in the Lord's service. Rejected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself, Kala Krishna Das. So do we reject or do we try to rectify? This is the question. Remember, Srila Prabhupada appreciated everything that anyone did in service to his mission. Now, I do remember hearing our godbrother Yogeshwara Prabhu saying, but I can't find any reference to it. Maybe that was when I heard Yogeshwara Prabhu speaking in Los Angeles. Sometime, I can't remember. I seem to remember that Yogeshwara Prabhu had asked Srila Prabhupada about sannyasis who fall, and Srila Prabhupada said, yeah, they can get married, and then after some time, when they're ready, they can take sannyas again. However, in the recently released video, Srila Prabhupada Memories, number 89, he gives a somewhat different version. It may be different occasions or whatever. Yogeshwara Prabhu relates that at Bhaktivedanta Manor, shortly after one of our sannyasi devotees had given up the sannyas order and married, Yogeshwara Prabhu, considering that this wasn't the first time, he said to Prabhupada, what should we tell people when they ask us, how come all our sannyasis are getting married? Of course, not all our sannyasis, but it may be taken like that. Sannyasi today, I'll give you a wedding ring because anyway, you're going to need one sooner or later. There's something like that. And another devotee who was there seemed horrified by what Yogeshwara had asked. But Prabhupada said, no, it's a good question. He thought and said, well, there's some precedent in our history. Nityananda Prabhu was a sannyasi, and then afterwards he married. What's the difference? Of course, Nityananda wasn't officially a sannyasi, but he was accepted as that. What's the difference? What does it matter, Prabhupada said? If someone is comfortable and able to go on with their preaching work, then this ashram, that ashram, what does it matter? He was being very liberal, very reasonable. He wasn't at all harsh about someone who may have accepted the renounced order prematurely. I'm reading and paraphrasing from Yogeshwara here. You know, those days it was emergency work and Prabhupada was awarding sannyas to young men, and in several instances they just weren't ready for the austerity, and I think, Yogeshwara said, that Prabhupada knew he was taking a chance. He said to me once that he has taken a transcendental gamble by coming from India and giving us the highest fruit of the tree of devotion. So he knew that there was a risk involved. He had to take that risk in order to establish roots for his movement in the West. Some years ago, I was discussing this with Prabhavishnu Swami. He was known as Prabhavishnu Swami at the time, did tremendous service to Srila Prabhupada's mission as a sannyasi. I was eyewitness to much of the struggle he went through in various places to establish Prabhupada's movement there. So we were discussing once about why Prabhupada made young sannyasis and they fell down, and Prabhavishnu told me, I don't know where he got it from, that Prabhupada, when he was asked about this, he said, it's just like sabji, vegetables. You get them fresh, cook them while they're fresh. Which I understood to mean that, yeah, they're ready now for cooking. If you leave them later, they won't have the same vitality. There is also the purport that Srila Prabhupada wrote in the Gajendra pastimes. That Gajendra, the elephant, 8th canto of Bhagavatam, was having his foot held by the crocodile. And while Srila Prabhupada was writing the purports, he, in this section, he got news of one sannyasi disciple who Srila Prabhupada very much appreciated, was very fond of, that this sannyasi had fallen away from sannyas, and woman problem. Srila Prabhupada wrote in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, chapter 8, text 30. For preaching we give young boys sannyas, but actually it is being experienced that they are not fit for sannyas. There is no harm, however, if one thinks that he is unfit for sannyas. If he is very much agitated sexually, he should go to the ashram where sex is allowed, namely the Grihastha ashram. So Srila Prabhupada says directly, sannyasi, you made you a sannyasi and you didn't make it, okay, become a Grihastha. That one has found to be very weak in one place does not mean that he should stop fighting the crocodile of Maya. One should take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, as we shall see Gajendra do, and at the same time can be a Grihastha if he is satisfied with sexual indulgence. There is no need to give up the fight. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore recommended Sthane Stita Shudigatang Tanuvang Manobhihi. One may stay in whichever ashram is suitable for him. It is not essential that one take sannyas. If one is sexually agitated, he can enter the Grihastha ashram, but one must continue fighting. For one who is not in a transcendental position, to take sannyas artificially is not a very great credit. If sannyas is not suitable, one may enter the Grihastha ashram and fight Maya with great strength, but one should not give up the fighting and go away. In this regard, I'm going to quote from another recently released video from the Srila Prabhupada Memories series that Siddhanta Prabhu is bringing out. This is from Pita Prabhu, who was with Srila Prabhupada, had a lot of association in Srila Prabhupada's room in the last 2 weeks and maybe a little more in Vrindavan, just as Srila Prabhupada was preparing to pass away from this world. So Pita Prabhu said that Srila Prabhupada said regarding his sannyasi disciples that if they fall down after he leaves, they can never be given sannyas again. He said that if you do, their fall down will go on forever. So if a sannyasi falls down, they can never again take sannyas. Prabhupada said, only I can do this. Only I can reinstate them. You cannot reinstate them. Now, that's quite a heavy statement. Heavy, what's the word? It's an important statement. It's surprising that no one else recounted that. Pita didn't say he was in the room alone. It's not recorded. Of course, not everything that Prabhupada said was recorded. Srila Prabhupada did say regarding the leadership in those last few weeks, Srila Prabhupada said that we have been lenient for the sake of working, but from now on we should be strict. I'm paraphrasing, of course, with the idea that Srila Prabhupada had, you could say, cut many corners or done many remarkable things for the sake of establishing the Krishna conscious movement. Young men as sannyasis, allowing them to go back to their wives or to get married, allowing divorce, but there's so many things. But Srila Prabhupada, he said, now we should be more strict. It's a broad statement. How is it to be applied? Many devotees have fallen and come back and done well. One example is Tribhuvanath Prabhu from Ireland, who joined in England, who is widely lauded as a saint, he went away for quite some time. He went away. Went away, was married, more or less living as a kami to all external appearances, and came back and did very well again. So we should be careful not to punish and deny devotees the chance to return. They could excel. We're talking about leadership and fall down. Yeah. Leaders means they could be just institutionally appointed, but even if you're institutionally appointed, if you don't rise on merit, but still it's not so easy to be a leader in Krishna consciousness. There's a lot of pressure, a lot of responsibility. We see what we're talking about is, in many cases, devotees who have done exceptional service, who have the ability to do more exceptional service. If they fall, it's how do we engage them? That we should think. We don't want to create a situation in which it seems that they are being allowed, so to speak, to get away with doing things which they really shouldn't have done. But at the same time, we don't want to cut them off from further service. The English saying is there, cut your nose to spite your face. It's a loss to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. It's a loss to ISKCON if devotees who can do good service are chased away because they did something which they really shouldn't have done. So it's a quandary. I'm not saying I have the answers, I'm just discussing the quandary. One thing that some devotees have done when they're under so much scorn within the ISKCON movement is to join another Vaishnav movement. I know one devotee from England who as a brahmachari was chased out or very unwelcome within the movement. There are claims of child abuse against him, which he vociferously denied, but I don't believe they were ever investigated by the CPO, because anyway he left ISKCON. And one sannyasi was lamenting to me, oh, he was doing such good service, he was helping me so much in my preaching. And he went on to take sannyasi in another institution and has excelled there. So he didn't go away from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, but he did go away from ISKCON. That's a possibility for devotees who find it too uncomfortable to live in ISKCON due to their being so much scorned and rejected due to mistakes, either real, not real or exaggerated, whatever it may be. That is an alternative. Srila Prabhupada didn't want devotees to leave ISKCON, but some devotees have done well, which they couldn't have done within ISKCON. That's another big discussion. Here's a quote from Srila Prabhupada in a conversation. Dedicate your life for Krishna. That is the perfection. Even if there are some faults, dedicated life is noble life. Maybe due to our past habits, we may commit some faulty action, but that dedicated life is sublime. I prefer to see that. The sublimity of the dedicated life. Someone does something wrong, yeah, we can't be blind to it. But look at the case of one particular devotee I'm thinking of. He made some mistake some decades ago. What is the seriousness of that mistake? It is disputed. But a mistake was there. There was contravention of sannyas principles, at the very least, we should say. Should he have stepped down at the time? Maybe. But he didn't. He went on and continued to do very well. He is one of the few who has taken the responsibility of spiritual leadership. Not many among Srila Prabhupada's disciples have done so. He is, you can't deny, you may say, well, he did that 30 years ago, but he is a spiritual leader who is rightly venerated and loved by thousands of devotees for his many years of exemplary Krishna conscious leadership, and for the love and the guidance and the shelter that he's liberally given to so many devotees over all these years. If we say that no one can come up after going down, then we deny the power of devotional service, of bhakti. One who falls must forever be rejected, then reject Krishna Kanamrita, written by Bilva Mangal Thakur, who was visiting a prostitute, gave it all up to go to Vrindavan, but on the way to Vrindavan, he came very close to almost falling down again. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't reject Krishna Karnamrita because Bilva Mangal had a fall. Lord Brahma, the head of our sampradaya, had an extremely serious fall, but those who mocked him for it became demons. He went on to become Namacharya Haridas Thakur, Vishwamitra. In his yoga practice, had a fall and went on to become the mentor of Rama and Lakshman. Chota Haridas, we discussed his story. He was seemingly rejected, but he was not actually rejected by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He eternally serves Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Ashwatthama. Who could have done such a horrible thing as Ashwatthama did? As killing so many people in their sleep, he's undergoing atonement for that, and later he'll become one of the Sapta Rishis, one of the seven rishis in the universe. Much more recently, Rupan Sanatan seem to have been practically Muslims, they themselves say that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur superficially ate meat, probably. Most of those who are listening to this talk have eaten meat, if not killed animals, or at least insects, if not in this life, in previous lives. I must have killed, if not in this life, in previous lives, I must have killed cows, women, children, I must have done all kinds of horrible things, because that's what we do in material life. We get birth after birth, we do so many bad things. How many lives have I had? Unlimited. I must have done so many bad things. Now by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, I've got a chance to chant Hare Krishna, which is actually an activity for the topmost Paramahamsas. So there is strictness is required. Lenience is required. Where do we draw the line? It's very hard to say, but my personal take on knowing personally devotees who have done things which they shouldn't have done and are very much rejected for that, I personally would like to encourage them to go on in devotional service in whatever way they can. There but for the grace of God go I, is the saying. As far as our whole institution is concerned, it is weakened by fall downs of leaders. We should recommit ourselves as a movement to the direction and protection of Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya. Everything will be all right if we get in line. It is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire, his mercy that we have taken to Krishna consciousness. We have to try to spread it to others as best we can, as we bumble along. And yes, we have to be very careful. We should do what we can to prevent sannyasis falling down, child abuse. These things should not happen. Should not happen. Ancha kalpataru paschaki parasintubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nitaya chunakang padiyami patyakrit vacha kalkushatam etad ahambra bhimi. Hey sadhava sakala eva vihaya durad. Gauranga changa charane kuruta. Parivadatu jano yata tata va nanamukaro navayang vichara. Hari rasa madira madati matta bhuvi vilutama natama nirvisha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.